We're up to Ezra. We don't have much to Pasuk Chaf. Ezra Perek Yud Pasuk Chaf. Only a few more Pesukim. Okay, I think we'll finish it off today. So just your names. Pesach Bebnei Imer. From the children of Imer, Chanoni U Zim Vadios. So again, we are continuing here similarly from the Kohanim. It's interesting that we give special mention to the children of Yehoshua Kohen Gadol. After we listed in Pasuk Yud Ches from the Bnei HaKohanim, that's a general introduction to the Kohanim, Asher Yeshiv Noshim Yochiyah, so we have Yehoshua ben Yotzad, he was the Kohen Gadol, V'yechav Ma'aseya V'Eliezer V'yariv U'gdal Yahu. Then we have Pasuk Yud Ches, that's Mafsik. Pasuk Yud Ches focuses specifically on them, that they gave their hand to divorce their wives, and they brought a karbon asham for their transgression. And then we resume to mention the other Kohanim and the Levim and the Israelim that were guilty of harboring Nashim Nachriyos. So you would expect, you would think that the Pasuk should tell us this fact, that they promised to divorce their wives in the very, very beginning, or to make mention of this fact at the very, very end. Yet, interestingly, it's mentioned in the middle, after we mentioned the first four perpetrators of the crime. We then mentioned that they v'yidu yadam lohotzi nashem v'yashem ha'elitzon al ashmasam, and seemingly that would indicate that these people were the leaders. The children, you can imagine, the children of the Kohen Gadol, his children, his own children went. That's the question. That's what we mentioned. We mentioned in total four different approaches, four different Nashik crisis, political, so security reasons, or religious reasons, like Shlomo HaMelech, or we mentioned yesterday, they thought it was mutter because that they were begeder avodim. And avodim, golos, then it's a different standard. If you already have a wife, okay, that's not so simple. That the fourth interpretation, the third is also not so simple, and neither is number one or two, for that matter. But it's interesting here that we give them special mention, but either give them hotzim in reference to those four. And similarly, the similar interpretation is that since they were the most distinguished members of Klal Yisrael that committed this sin, if they would do tshuva, then everything would follow from there. Everyone would follow suit by observing their conduct. Okay, then we again, Pasuk Chaf is Bnei Imer Chanoni Uzevadiyah, Pasuk Chaf Aleph Bnei Chorim Ma'aseyah Ve'elya Ushmaya V'chiel V'uziyah Ubnei Pashchor El Yo'enai Ma'aseyah Yishmael Nisanel Yo'zovod and Ve'el Osa. Okay, so that concludes the Kohanim. Now we go to the Levim. I mean, Levim, from the Levim we have Yozavad, Vishmi, Vikeloya, who's Keloya? So here, for whatever reason, the pasuk tells us, do not make a mistake, who Kelita. He was also known, he had two names. He was known by two different names, Kelia, Keloya, and Kelita. Now we have Pesachia, Yehuda, Ve'Eliezer. Pesachia was a name we had before. It's someone that Mordechai's name was called Pesachia, but that's not the same Pesachia, because Mordechai was not from Shevet Levi. Mordechai was from Binyamin and from Yehuda, mother and father. He was a mix between two Shvatim. So here we're dealing with the Pesachia. We're dealing with another person. Many people have the same names that we know from other different stories, and Yehuda the Eliezer, and Yehuda and Eliezer. Next, so Min HaMishoyrim. So the first Pasuk of Gilman discussed just a general catch-all of Levim, a general reference to many Levim. Now we go in more in detail, and we specifically refer to one of the families, the Levim, which the Mishorim, the Levim that actually would sing and play musical instruments in the Beis HaMikdash, El Yoshev, period. Only one person, only one perpetrator. Umin HaSharim, those that were in charge of the gates, to open and close the gates. He was Shalom, we have Shalom, Votelem, V'Uri. Next, Umi Yisrael. Now we go to the Israelim, Umi Yisrael, Mubnei Farosh. We have from the family of the Farosh family, we have Ramya and Viziya Umalkia Umiyamin the Elazar Umalkia Uvinoya. These are everyone, of course, the name of a person. Next, Umibnei Elam, we have Matanya, Zechariah, Vichiel, the Avdi, Viremos, and the Eliya. Next, Umibnei Zatu, El Yoenai, the El Yoshiv, Matanya, Viremos, Vizavod, Vaaziza. Ubnei Beivoy, Yehoi Chonon, Chananya, Zabai, and Asloi. It's interesting that we have Yehochanan and Chananya. Sometimes you find that Yehochanan and Chananya are the same. that a person is like a nickname, because they both come from the expression of chayin. I don't recall any specific examples, but I do remember seeing them in the Farshim that they want to learn that it's different place in Tanakh, and in every Hayamim, one time he's called Yochanan, he's called Chananya, because of these, but here it appears to be two different people, Yehochanan, Chananya, Zabai, and Asloi. Next, Pasuk of Tes.
Before in Pasuk Tes Vav, we had that Shaila by the Yonasan ben Ashoel, the Chaya Chazo,
whether yeah.
they were.
Azarum, right.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
We bring any right from all the names here that if they're not mentioned, it's unlikely. If they would have been so much against it, they probably would have been a Baal.
There'd be no give. Maybe yeah. then they're.
No, they would have probably been actual themselves if they were so much against it. If their name was not mentioned here, so it's indicative that they were not against it.
Now, I hear what you say, but the Farshim say both ways. You want to bring right that they were not guilty. If they were guilty, they would be against it. But there would be no gabadover. If they were guilty, so then their opinion would not be they have no legitimacy to their opinion. They're no gabadover. They're suspected of doing the avera. So it doesn't seem that they would.
Well, either way, then you bring a right if I care.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know the answer. I hear what you're saying, but they're saying they're not mentioned. And okay. But b'nei pasuk chafches b'nei beivoy yehoychanon chananya zabai asloi pasuk. We have Mishulam, Maluch, Va'adoya, Yoshov, and Yoshov, Ushaol, and Yiramos. Or the Gears decree is Viramos, not a Vav Yud, but Viramos. His name, the Vav, is just the Vav Achibur. Pasuk Lamed, Mubnei Pachas Moav. So we know that it was a family. We mentioned a few times that when Klai Yisrael were living in Eretz Yisrael, Moav was a nation which caused Bnei Yisrael much harm, and there were many wars, and David HaMelech conquered them, and he appointed a family to always watch them, to make sure they don't step out of line, and every year they would give tribute, they would pay high taxes to Klal Yisrael, and there was a family that was called the Pachas Moav, the governor of Moav, which was like he was a very significant leader, a family that had very authority over this nation. From this family we have Adnah, Uchlol, Benoya, Maaseya, Matanya, we already have another time before, and Vitzalel, Uvinui, Umenashef. Next, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, B'nei Chorim, we have Eliezer, Yeshia, Malkia, another Malkia we had there before, and we have another Malkia, Shemaya, and we have Shimon. Pasuk Lamed Beis. What?
Good old name, Shimon.
Shimon, a regular name. You want to go learn names here, you can find a whole collection of new names. Lamed Beis, Binyamin, Maluch, and Shemaria. Mibnei Choshum, we have Matnai, Matata, Zovod, Eliphelet, Yeremai, Menashe, and Shemi. Mibnei Voni, we have Madai, Amram, and Ve'uel. Pasuk Lamed Hei, Binoya, Vedya, and Kiluhu, that's the name of a person. It's a very unusual name, Kiluhu, which means all of them, but it doesn't mean over here all of them. It means that was his name. Pasuk Lamed Vav, Vanya, Miremos, and El Yoshev. Lamed Zayin, Matanya, Matnai, V'yaasov, or the Kri is V'yaasoy. Next, Lamaches, Uvani, Uvinui, and Shimi, V'she Lemya. Vinoson va'adoyo. Quick pasuk mem. Mach nad vai and shoshai. Interesting name. And soroy. Soroy, that was Sarah, but here it's soroy, name of a man.
Shoroy.
Shoshai and shoroy. Shoshai, shoroy. Azar el vishe lemyohu and shemaria. Shalom. Amaria Yosef, Bibne Nevo, Yiel, Matisio, Zovod, Zivino, Yedai, Vioel, Benoya. And finally, Pasik Memdalid, Kol Ela, all of these people, count all the numbers, we count it carefully, it's exactly 113. Kol Ela, all of these, Nasu, Nashim, Nachrios, they married non-Jewish women. The Yesh Mehem Noshim, some of them, not only did they marry women, it's interesting that it repeats here, but Vayosimu Bonim, they had children from these women.
We also separated them.
And they separated them. again, those are illegitimate children. Those children can follow the mother. And the Farshim take note from this pasuk that that's why it says vayosimu banim, that they issue, they cast banim. Doesn't say that they were moilid, gave birth to children, because it's only considered your child, the normal expression, the regular expression of giving birth, bringing into the world, when you are in halacha, considered that person's father. But being that here in halacha, you're not considered that person's father, because these are non-Jewish women. In halacha, the child follows the mother. If the mother is not Jewish, the child is not Jewish. So the Torah, the Ezra, did not want to give this nice word of that they fathered hilidu banim, they gave birth to children, in order to bring out the ugliness and the sin, and to mention that they're illegitimate. It's vayosimu banim, it's like they produced, they manufactured banim, some type of clinic. Go to a clinic and you do all these high-tech things to put out a couple of kids. It's not considered a Yiddish approach to having children, especially when they're not related to you.
They didn't mention the women that marry.
Exactly. So that's an issue. We discussed that a few times. That's an issue. How come we don't mention any women? Because we do find the Ezra-giving Musar. He does say that there are two sins. Number one, that the men marry non-Jewish women. Number two, that you have taken for your daughters non-Jewish husbands. So that's a very good question. What happened to these people? So either the answer is that it was not true, that it did not happen. Ezra, when he made the investigation, there were no violators. He suspected them incorrectly that there were perpetrators in this matter. Or what you can say, it's a little bit of a stretch, is that these people were guilty. Not only, well, see, possibly says they took nosu noshim nachuyos, but maybe what it means is that they took. No, there is not
enough. I would think that it's because the women are not responsible. It's like hakolim, sort of, in a way.
Sort of like
husbands
what?
Husbands give away the fathers give away the daughters.
Okay.
The men take them. Could be in those times. It was a time when people just took the wives and they had nothing to say in the matter. So the women wouldn't be responsible for their actions because they didn't have any actions.
Yeah, but
it's the men that are the responsible ones.
But the Mepharshim do appear, I don't remember exactly, that the father has shlita over her daughter.
Right.
And if the father would object,
the father's a blame.
Right, the father's a blame.
But not the women.
Right. But it doesn't mention here, when the Pasuk concludes this list, called a list, let's say we would not have Pasuk Mem Dalet. Let's say we would stop with Pasuk Mem Gimel. Then I would suggest an answer is that when we list these 113 people, doesn't necessarily mean that they all took for themselves non-Jewish wives. It means they took for their daughters, son-in-laws. They had a daughter in Shidduchim, and they went to the Geisha University, and they looked for a good boy, and they took for their daughter a non-Jewish boy.
But I would think the women didn't necessarily seek out.
Right. Like Nechanami. So the women are not guilty.
Not a woman.
They're not guilty. But was there a violation of this sin of let's focus not on the girls, because they're not responsible for their actions. They're under the influence of their father. But was there a violation of fathers of Jewish girls taking for their daughters non-Jewish son-in-laws?
And if there was, you would expect the fathers to be mentioned.
Right. So if we're not for Pasuk Mem Dalet, I would suggest that when we list these 113 people, there are two categories. Some of them actually married non-Jewish women, and some of them had daughters and were guilty of allowing or actually seeking out non-Jewish husbands for their daughters. That's what I would suggest. And that is very reasonable, because Ezra twice criticizes them for the sin of, number one, marrying non-Jewish women, number two, giving your daughters to men that are not Jewish. But the Pasuk Mem Dalet doesn't say that. It makes it very clear. Kol Eileh, all of these listed, all 113 people listed, what was their sin? It's clear as day. Nosu Noshim Nochrios. They themselves married non-Jewish women. The Yesh Mehem Noshim, some of them, not only did they marry Noshim, Vayosimu Bonim, they had children from these women as well. But what about giving your daughter to a non-Jewish man, which Ezra criticized them? There is no mention. So what happened? I don't know the answer. I didn't see anything in the Mepharshim. Yeah?
According to the point of view that there was a shidduch,
yes,
the women had men to marry, but the men didn't have women to marry.
So there was no guilt. So but Ezra suspected. I know we don't know what happened exactly. It's not recorded, but it's something which is difficult. I mean, it's difficult. We also that it's only 130 that you would expect. You know, after reading how Ezra reacts to the crisis, you would expect that the percentage of intermarriages is over 50%, and we're dealing over here with a fraction of 1%. There are probably at least 50,000 people, at least 50,000 people living in Eretz Yisrael, and after 30,000 people, you only can find 130 people who are intermarried. Today, it's over 50% in the United States of America. So and yet he reacts in this violent.
Are these people only the ones, perhaps, that they were just the
leaders, influential people. So you're saying, okay,
they were
other people to learn from their ways. Okay, so you're saying a chiddush. You're saying that it really was much more widespread, and we're only listing the major violators. People have responsibility, and that will in the mail mean that there were also people guilty of giving their daughters to non-Jewish men. So Lot is not being recorded here in the pasuk. Okay, perhaps we don't know. It's not clear. You have to look more carefully.
Didn't divorce their wives weren't mentioned?
They did. They listened. They did divorce their wives.
Maybe didn't divorce their wives.
No. I mean,
all of them divorced.
Call Ayla.
Saying that maybe some that didn't divorce the wives.
They remain married. Those are the ones who are not mentioned. They don't care. And we're only listing the people that were
the tshuva.
Did the Kohanim gave a carbon
asham. They brought a carbon asham. That's another question which I don't have an answer for. That's what I began with.
An interesting distinction here.
Yeah.
Why they brought an asham. In other words, he says there's two different schools of thought.
Yeah.
There are those that say that it's a roshav.
Right.
No evidivri by
Shem. Right. So you're referring to a Gemara Masechta Krisus.
Right.
Let me read the Gemara Masechta Krisus. Lami Krivu Asham. I told you yesterday a drush,
right.
But the Gemara, there's a technical Gemara, which the Malbim, which has the article, he has a law, he goes through the whole Malbim very, very in detail. Lami Krivu Asham, Osam Rav Chista, Malami, Shukulam, Shifochis, Charufis, Boalu. It's a tremendous chiddush. That what was their sin? They had relations with actual non-Jewish women that were designated to real Jewish avodim ivrim. Question is, were there avodim ivrim at this point in time? So seemingly, bo'alu v'abol shifcha harufa chayiv asham. So the Malbim has a discussion, was there, it was a legitimate carbon asham, wasn't a horo'asha. Rashi and the Mitzvah say there was horo'asha. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. The Gemara seems to say there's such an opinion that it was not a horo'asha, it was an actual halacha. So what does that border on? So the Malbim says, the machlokes is there an Eved Ivri at this point in time? If a Jew is a slave to a Goy, is that what he says? If a Jew is a slave to a Goy, is he called an Eved Ivri? Maybe the only time you're called an Eved Ivri is when a Jew is a slave to a Jew. But if a Jew is a slave to a Goy, there's no Din Eved Ivri. And at this point in time, there was no such thing as a Jew being a slave to a Jew, because you need to have the possibility for there to be a Nirtzah. The only time you can have a din of an Eved Ivri by a Jew to a Jew is when you can have an Eved Ivri. An Eved Ivri means you can become a Nirtzah. And the Nirtzah, you have to go to the Sanhedrin Yovel, and there is no Yovel. Yovel was not in practice at this point in time because the majority of Klal Yisrael were not yet living in Eretz Yisrael. So there's no potential for Yovel. So there's no potential for Nirtzah. And that automatically means there's not going to be any potential for Eved Ivri. So the only way we can have an Eved Ivri in some form and fashion is if a Jew is a slave to a non-Jew. So that's what the Malbim wants to suggest. The machlokes in the two different opinions of Rashi's approach, other Rishonim, other Makaros, is that it was Hayro Ashah, because it's not Shaykh a real Eved Ivri, and the Gemara of Masechta the Kresos that says no, it was a real Shiv Charufa, because there is a Din Eved Ivri even during this period of time.
Maybe at this time they didn't determine what the rules or regulations would be of Bayesheni until they saw what was happening.
Okay,
they didn't know it.
There was Chilukideus, even among the people themselves, the Halacha Maisa. It wasn't codified. There were different opinions, different people did everyone. Ish Hayosha ben Avyasa and Halacha. This is my minute, this is your minute, we do whatever we want. That was a drush, that was a whole dirty. Right, that's a drush. That's working with the assumption that there's no Din Eved Ivri, and that's what Rashi says, Choyro Asha. The Mitzuda says it was Hayro Asha. So why did he bring a carbon asham? Doesn't make any sense. I just told you a drush is that they had a low self-esteem. They view themselves as avodim, and avodim, it's not so terrible for an Eved to marry a non-Jewish woman. The Torah says, you can't argue with me, the Torah says. And that's what misled them. It's not such a terrible thing. So we marry non-Jewish women, we have Jewish wives, we will perpetuate Klal Yisrael, there will be Jewish continuity, and we'll have a shiksa, and the shiksa will have non-Jewish children, and they'll go to non-Jewish schools. We'll keep them separate. We'll keep them separate. And it's not such a terrible avera. That is a fundamental flaw in their thinking, and that is what Ezra criticized and warned, that you're not avodim, chas v'shalom. It's all a drush. But there's a good technical element that's discussed by the Malbim, and it's the Gemara Masechet Kreis, so Daf Yud Aleph, and Rashi here doesn't say the Rashi say Rashi. Let's see, just the Rashi. You want to say something?
Yes. An Hebrew, a Jew who owes money, and
yeah,
can't pay it.
Yeah.
He sells himself to pay off the debt. Not necessarily the person who buys him.
Correct. Correct. Right.
Didn't actually.
The Bezin sells him. Yeah.
And what happens to no Jew? Can he sell to a guy? Bezin can't sell him.
The Gemara talks about a situation where he ends up he's working for the church. He ends up that things get really bad. Bezdin will never sell him to a church, but a person on his own may be so desperate, he needs to support his family, he'll do anything, he'll sell himself, he'll sweep the floors in the church. That's part of the Teichacha. Oyle Eker, Mishpachas Ger, Avoyde Zara Atzma. We have even Moshe Rabbeinu's own grandson. Had no parnasa. This is safe end of Sefer Yoshua. He had no parnasa. He was desperate, destitute. So he sold himself. He was a shamus in a church. In a mamish, he was in a.
Is that the union of Pesel? He was one of the.
Pesel Micha. Yeah. It's the end of Sefer Yoshua. It's in the very tragic. Story which unfortunately has repeated itself in history hundreds of times, where the biggest Gedolei Hadar, their own grandchildren, are mechusar lechem, and they have to do things that no one in the wildest imagination would imagine. This is what will become of the grandchildren and the descendants of the Gedolei Hadar. Mi gadol lanu mi Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu's own grandson had no parnasa, and he was forced to sell himself to work in a church. He was a priest. He worked his way up in the ranks. He became the Pope.
Sanhedrin couldn't sell him to a Pope.
No, Sanhedrin would never do that. They're not allowed to do that. They have no authority to sell. A person can do it himself. He's desperate. He'll do whatever he wants. No one's going to stop a person. It's a free world. Supposedly, it's a free world. But what? Yeah. So go look around today, and unfortunately you see the same thing. You see people. Halavai. I mean. We hope so. Yes and no. I mean, unfortunately, if you look hard enough, you'll find horror stories. Find horror stories wherever you go. Rahman al Stan. That's. Baruch Hashem. Today things are better than they used to be. You have all these horrible. You have to talk to the people that actually in Kiruv. Rabbi Buchwald. He has horror stories about people out all over America that he discovers that they come from the greatest tichos, ben achaben, from the biggest gedolim, people that you learn, all the freshmen, the mikros gedolos, their own great, their descendants, I remember my father, Zohar Levrach, he once made an appeal, remember many years ago, my father, when he first became Rav. So in those days, you didn't have an emergency every day. Today, Rahman will study about the newspaper, every other paper, Rahman will study this one, this tsar and that tsar. It's like there's no end. It's like Imam is just like, it's just because the population grows and so on and so forth. Those days, you didn't hear every day, there wasn't such a story every day where Rahman's case. So there was a Maishahai, a young person died, and he was, I think, a ben, he was. A descendant, I think, from the Chofetz Chaim, someone from the family of the Chofetz Chaim. I don't know the yichus. So I remember my father. He made an appeal Friday night in shul, and he said, Friday night in shul, it was someone in the community, and he said that everyone here learns Mishnah Berurah. Everyone here knows what a Mishnah Berurah is. Everyone here has a connection to some degree to the Chofetz Chaim. His own einikol. A terrible tragedy. This is from the family of the Chofetz Chaim. You're not going to come forward and help, give assistance. And he made a very powerful impression. I remember a person came over to my father. The next day, gave my father a $100 check on Sunday. And he told my father, I cannot afford this. I'm a very poor person. I barely have what to eat. But it made such an impression on me. You're right. I learned Chofetz Chaim, Mishnah Berurah, Chofetz Chaim, his own einikol. he's desperate, of course. Unfortunately, today, you know, you go bankrupt before you blink because there's so many tzaris like this. But that's a very, how do we get to that? How we got to that with Yeshua. Yeshua Kohen Gadol, his own children, but it's a very sad story. People over here, they did things that they were very desperate. You want to say something?
I hope it had a good ending.
What? That person? I don't know what the ending was. I don't know what the ending was. Okay, let's see the Rashi. Let's finish up some of the Rashis.
People email, and they went down.
Which pasuk? Yeah.
They went to Eretz Yisrael also.
These are people living in Eretz Yisrael. They're all in Eretz Yisrael. These are people living in Eretz Yisrael. Absolutely. When Ezra came, that's the Gemara Masechta Kedusha. Before he came to Eretz Yisrael, he made sure that in Bavel everything was clean. Right. And Bavel, in fact, Bavel, the Yichus in Bavel, the Gemara says, is better than the Yichus Ezra, because Ezra was there for 25 years. Right. He was there the entire time. He didn't let anything get out of hand. And Eretz Yisrael wasn't under his control. Things got out of hand. He came 25 years later, and then he saw what was going on there. He ripped his clothing. He told us the greatest korban. He had to separate these 113 people. Okay, it's Poshup shot. There were only 113 people. You take something very literally. Only 113, and there were no situations, cases where women were married to non-Jewish men. If you take the psukim literally, even though there are references in the Musar that they assumed that was taking place, the pasuk records that it was not. And again, we have to remember the people are singled out not for their sin; they're being singled out for praise that they did tshuva. They did tshuva for their sins. They listened to what Ezra said. They divorced. They separated from their foreign wives. And they separated their illegitimate children. Let's see just some of the Rashis.
Email had a Jewish wife. And so did...
Many of them had business than other wives.
In order for them to have the sons.
The sons were illegitimate. They married non-Jewish wives. And they had children.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. Polygamy. Polygamy. They had more than one wife. How common was this in the time of Ezra? It doesn't seem that it was so. I don't know. In the time of there's much discussion and research if there was polygamy in Klal Yisrael all throughout history. Go through the entire history of Klal Yisrael. Was it customary for men to marry more than one wife among the Sfarim, among the Ashkenazim? So it appears not. It appears it was very, very rare in Belitz by Ashkenazim. Even going back, even the time of Tanakh, it appears it was rare. Now over here, in the time of Ezra, now we know Yaakov Avinu, we know he had four wives. Okay, Yaakov Avinu, okay, we don't know the time of the Torah. There is a lot of research, and a lot of people are under the impression, you learn Mishnayis, you learn Sechtivamis, a man has two wives, three wives, four wives, and then one of them dies. So you get the impression, Yeshiva Pacha seems to get the impression that in ancient times, there was polygamy, it was widespread. And that's definitely not true.
Depends on the economy.
The
amount of boys are getting taken away or killed in war.
War, correct. And all the
not enough men.
But even with that, even with all of those factors, it seems that it was very limited. It was more common among Sfardim than it is among Ashkenazim. And even among Sfardim was not as widespread as people are misled to believe when you learn all the various things. But here in Ezra, it seems clearly that there was. There was some degree of men having more than one wife. Okay, let's see some of the Rishonim of the Rashi very quickly. Rashi, we started today with Pasik Yud Chaf, just a few of the little short Rashis. Chaf, Mabnei Imer, called Elu Kohanim, Umin Alvim, Vigomer, so we have Kohanim. Some of them, not only do they have non-Jewish wives, they had children from the non-Jewish wives, and all of these people, so that's someone asked the question, we're not just singling them out, they listen. The reason why the Pasukim single out these people is they listen to the Musar of Ezra, Yaakol, Hayitziu, Hanoshim, V'Habonim, every single one of them, they cast out their non-Jewish wives. Let's run through the Mitzudos pasuk Chav Gimel by Yimin Alavim. Hayunaisim Nashim Ayuvus Kachavim VeKalio Hu Kalita. They have one person at two names. Bishtei Hashemos Hayunikra. Kalia and Ukalita. And there must be some significance in why this person has two names and why we go through the effort to mention both of his names. I guess he went bankrupt. He had to change his name. It was very common in Europe. See, in America, it's no big deal. You go bankrupt. So you go bankrupt, okay? So you go file bankruptcy, chapter 11, and go weiter. In Europe, when you went bankrupt before the war, you changed your name. That's how it was. And there's a story. I don't remember one of the Gedolei Yisrael came to America. I don't remember. I listened to Rabbi Aaron Rakefet. He is bucky in American Jewish history, among other things. One of the big Gedolei Yisrael, no one even realizes, is the son. I remember of another one of the Gedolei Yisrael. How could it be that they have different names? The reason why no one knows that there are two major figures. Again, I'm just recalling from memory, two major rabbinic figures that played a very great role in American Jewry and in European Jewry, and no one connects the dots that this is father and son. The answer is because they had different last names, and that begs the question: well, how in the world does the father and son have different last names? The answer is, the son, before he went into Rabbanus, he was in business, and he went bankrupt, and he had to change his name. He saw he wasn't Matzlich in business, he went bankrupt, changed his name. He said, no, I'll go into Rabbanus. Normally it's the other way around. You start in Rabbanus, you can make a parnasa, then you go into some business or profession.
New Jersey, they said, we're driving by, they had face recognition software, and they said that people had more than one license. They had like six DUIs in them once, so they changed their name and used someone else's name.
Okay, that's criminal activity. Okay, that's criminal activity, but in Europe, there's a lot of dignity. See, today we lost that dignity. You lost that dignity that your name is your reputation. And when you went out of business, that's it, you couldn't live. No one would go near you. It's hard for us to understand this. Today they'll honor you in a dinner, you do whatever you want, as long as you give money to the institution, you'll be the guest of honor, no shame, no problem. And that's why you find people changing their name. So here, you see that, for whatever reason, we're not letting this guy get away with it. Plus success. Kalia Hukilita. We're letting you know who he is. We're telling you exactly who he is. That's a theme which appears in many places. The governor of Moab, this is a theme. It's a family. It's very hard to understand. This family that David appointed, you are in charge of Moab. You collect from them taxes, and you make sure they stay in line. And some of them had with them children. As we mentioned, by Yasimu and not Halidu. The Yasimu, it's a very, they just produce, they manufacture children without any yichus, any family connection. Okay, so that concludes Sefer Ezra. Just a little bit of Ezra, it's looking back at Sefer Ezra, it's a sad story. It's a sad Sefer. Because Ezra, he starts out with the greatest expectations to bring Mashiach. Think about what's happening here in the Sefer. Koresh issues, it begins with Koresh issues, a proclamation. Everyone can go back to Eretz Yisrael. This was before the miracle of Purim. That's how the Sefer begins. Before the miracle of Purim, v'shnas achas l'koresh melech paras. This pasuk really picks up on the end of Divrei Hayamim, being of Sefer. And there was a proclamation by Koresh. Koresh, he knew that Yeshaya predicted that he would allow the Jewish people to return to Eretz Yisrael. And 42,360 people get up, and they go to Eretz Yisrael. And then, little by little, everything goes wrong. That's really the whole story. First of all, as they began to leave, right away, Koresh realized, oh no, there's a brain drain, or there's a talent drain on my country, on the country of Persia. Because who controlled the economy? Who are the geniuses? Who are the college professors? Who are all the professionals? Who are the businessmen? Who controlled the banking system? The Jews. The Jews are leaving. The whole economy, the whole country will collapse. So right away, he issued a stay. That was the first sad story. Anyone who already crossed the river, okay, you escaped. You can go. But anyone that did not yet, who's late, anyone who did not yet cross the river, flights are canceled. All the flights are canceled. The airport is closed. You're not going nowhere. I changed my mind because I realize now the economy, the country will collapse if more Jews can. So he issued a stay. Only 42,360 were able to escape. They go. They go and they start rebuilding, and they do for rebuilding for start for 3 years, and then what happens? The next tragedy. The Aseres B'nei Haman come along and they make trouble. The Tsare Yehuda, and they send letters, a sitna, an accusation to Koresh. The Jews are rebelling. You only gave permission to build a mikdash. They're building a city. They're building walls. They're building fortifications. They're trying to conquer the country. They're going to rebel against you. And Koresh says, you're right. I'm issuing a construction freeze. Another tragedy. And that goes on for 14 years, and then during that period of time, the miracle of Purim happens. Okay? And then comes Daryavesh Ben Esther. Oh, everyone can go. Go once again, you can resume rebuilding. They tell everyone. And things are okay, so now we're back on track. We're going. Ezra comes. And Ezra assumes we're going to bring Mashiach. Well, now it took time. Okay, there was a delay. Things didn't work out exactly, but it's still hope. By rebuilding the Bayis Sheni, we're going to bring Melech HaMashiach. It's going to be the Gula Shlema. And then Ezra comes, and he realizes Mashiach's not coming. His expectations are dashed and everything falls apart, and when he learns about the intermarriage, and then he says, no, let's just do the best that we can, at least separate yourselves from the non-Jewish women. And if you read carefully the Psukim, he really indicates that Mashiach's not coming anytime soon. So if you look at Sefer in the big picture of things, it's a very sad story. You go one step forward, two step backwards. That's really the whole story of Sefer Ezra. But on the other hand, there are mirelists about Ezra. I mean, we're not finished with Ezra. We have Nehemiah. Nehemiah is really part of Ezra. But there are very big mirelists that Kedusha Shnia Kitsha L'Shaita V'Kitsha L'Oselava. That the Kedusha Shnia, that during the time of the Bayis Rishon, it was only a temporary Kedusha. It was only Kodush as long as the people were living in the land. As long as they were there. When the Bayis was destroyed, the Kedusha disappeared. The Eretz Yisrael lost its sanctity. When Ezra came, Kibush Sheni, the Kedusha they gave the land is a permanent Kedusha. It's a stable Kedusha. It's permanent. This week's parsha, we will be parsha in a few moments, but we have Vishachanti b'sachvichu l'ichuma, make for me a mikdash. Vishachanti b'soicham. What does it mean, Vishachanti? If you study Tanakh, you will discover the word Vishachanti doesn't just mean I will dwell. It means kvias, a permanent dwelling. A person comes, you pitch a tent. You have an oihel. You're there. I'm here for today. Tomorrow I'm gone. I'm not here. I'm not here permanently. The word shachanti, we have. I don't remember all the examples now. But if you study, go through the psukim, take out a concordance, and you look at all the psukim, you'll notice the word shachanti doesn't just mean I'm going to dwell here. I will dwell here permanently. The dwelling that was accomplished in the time of Ezra was a permanent dwelling. It was a deeper dwelling, because Kedusha Shnia Kitsha L'Shaita V'Kitsha L'Asalava.
How could it be a deeper thing if you say that the whole second base of Midrash was missing those five things?
Because it was through tshuva, b'mokam, because it was done with a greater degree of maturity. B'mokam Shabbat L'Tshuva Oimdim Ein Tzadikim Gemurim Yecholim Lamod. A Tzadik Gamor has a mile, he never sinned. But he doesn't have the full experience of seeing everything from every angle. He doesn't understand. Now, no one's called to become chashol to be nichshol. But we have no choice after the fact. B'makom shebali tshuva oimdim, Klal Yisrael was now begeder bali tshuva. They learn from their experiences. They know what it means to sin. They know the consequences firsthand, and they come back with new resolve. That new resolve automatically is much deeper, much more powerful, much more sincere, and that has an effect on the Kedusha, which gave them the power to sanctify the land. L'shaita v'kitsha l'asilavo. I'm going to give you another example. It's really for the parasha. We have in this parasha the Mishkan. The Mishkan, then what was the Mishkan made from? It was made from living items. Wood. Atzei shitim oimdim. Wood. Wood is, what is wood? Wood is a living organism. Then what was the car for the Mishkan? The animal hides. Wool, linen, things which grow from the animal, and the oirois, the ezim, goat skins, the skins of goats. And then on top of that was the elim me'odamim, the hides of animals. What the Mishkan, the place that housed the Shekhinah, were things that had life. The Mishkan Shiloh, okay, go to the next major structure. When they came into Eretz Yisrael, the walls were no longer made from wood. The walls were made from stone. Stone is a lower type, lower level. It's a domain. It's not a living. It's stone is the domain. Tzameach Chai Medaber. The Mishkan was made from Tzameach and Chai. Tzameach and Chai. Mishkan Shiloh was made from domain. The walls were made from stone, but the covering, the roof of Mishkan Shiloh was made from skin, from Chai. The Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni was made from 100% stone. Even the ceiling, there was wood in the ceiling, but it was covered with cement. Was all the entire dwelling place, resting place of the Shechina was more permanent. It was made from domim. So the Bali Musa, the Bali Machshav explained, it's a higher madrega. And to give sanctity to the domim, to give sanctity to stone, that's a greater talent. When you're dealing with a human being, something that's alive, life, something that has living breath, you have, an animal. So an animal is a living creature. That comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is some degree of spirituality in something which is alive. Life by nature is spiritual. So the Mishkan, the place that houses the Shechina, is a spiritual abode. But it's a much greater kunz to infuse sanctity in stone, in something which has no life. That's, you require a greater degree of sanctity to sanctify an object which has no life, a domain. And that's the process. The Kedusha of the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni, for that matter, in a certain sense, is even greater than the Kedusha of the Mishkan. Now, we know that Neskanu Hadaros, there was the Shechina, there are two different ways of looking at it. Certainly, the Kedusha was more intense in the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu and the Kruvim and Shlomo HaMelech and Mishkan Shiloh, but yet, the Bayis Rishon, as we go later in time, there is a Mila of that the Kedusha, it may not be as intense, but it's deeper. It's deeper, it's more penetrating. It penetrates even the domain. And the same way you have this in Mokoim, in material, you have that theme in Sefer Ezra. Ezra is now coming up to Eretz Yisrael. It's pathetic. 42,360 compared to the millions of people that used to live the Bayis Rishon. And what are they building? They're building a small little structure, and everything that can go wrong goes wrong, and there's intermarriage. But yet, Kedusha Shnia Kitsha L'Shaita V'Kitsha L'Ostilavo. They accomplished something that was never accomplished before. They were able to put Kedusha into the domain. Just like in the Mishkan, Shiloh, Mikdash, we go from Chai to more things which are more mundane. In Kufa, in time-wise, going from the time of Yehoshua now to Ezra, they're giving Kedusha to the land, to the Mikdash, that will remain even after the Churban will occur. Because they have the full picture, the full perspective of seeing Geula and seeing Churban. Okay, so that's at least one positive spin to put on the conclusion of Sefer Ezra. Kedusha Gashaina Kitzlo Shaita Kitzlo Savo Hajlach Sefer Ezra Vahajalan Hajlach Sefer Ezra Vahajalan. And Amir Tashem will do first Nehemiah. And we'll start Nehemiah. What? Because it's really part of Nehemiah. Ezra is part of Nehemiah. So Amir Tashem will start Nehemiah next week.